What's going on, guys? Your boy is back with another solo episode. We are recording a solo episode today. And damn, it's been a while. For those of you who listen to the Aux podcast, which is another podcast that I host where I now have longer conversations with my brothers Matt and Dave and then other close friends as well, you know that on that podcast I was putting out shorter form episodes every day, like almost every day for two and a half years, something like that. And I got burnt out. I got burnt out from recording the solo episodes. I wanted to focus more on conversations. And now that I've had a bit of a break from recording solo episodes every single day, which... Like, there were some days where it was amazing. I would always have something to talk about that I would be worried that I wouldn't be able to figure out something to talk about, that, you know, somehow I was going to run out of ideas. But there's always things happening. And if you're also doing things, if you're having new experiences, you never run out of things to talk about. So, you know, I'm grateful for that time on the Aux where I was putting out these 10 to 15 minute episodes every day, took a step back from that, focused more on conversations on the Auxoro podcast. And now I'm feeling like I want to do solo episodes, but longer and less frequent. So I have a little bit more flexibility. So going forward, I'm probably going to put out one of these a month on the public feed on the Auxoro podcast, and then one behind the premium feed if you guys want to check it out at auxoro.supercast.tech. That is where I have bonus episodes, two per month, and we get into topics like MK Ultra. We have one coming out on the obesity epidemic. We did one on the rise of Tom Cruise. We did one on Tim Dillon. Like, basically any exciting topic and interesting topic that me and my brothers want to dive into, we put two of those up, which are each about 2 hours each, so 4 hours total of bonus conversations on Auxoro Premium, plus the bonus solo episodes. And you guys can also submit topics for me to talk about. You can submit, you know, whatever the fuck you want. If titties, money, Bitcoin, curtains, seeing titties through curtains, although this, depending on the situation, that could be highly illegal. But I'll talk about it if you want me to talk about it. So, yeah. I'm going to do the solos. I'm going to do them in the longer format. This episode, I have no idea what this is going to be, but it maybe be 30 minutes, maybe it'll be an hour. We'll just go with the flow. We'll see what's happening, what is going on, and yeah, let's dive into it. So I want to start off by talking about drinking. And an experience that I've had last night, but also kind of connected to a life, you know, a lifelong journey with drinking alcohol. And I've gone through stints where I haven't drank alcohol. I've gone through stints where I have drank very heavily, especially in college. And now I'm kind of at the point where I'm drinking more like an adult, where I'll drink maybe one or two nights during the week. I got my coffee right here. And, you know, during COVID, I really wasn't drinking heavily on the weekends. But now that things are back, I may have a couple times a month where I'm drinking more heavily. But I wanted to go through some things that I was feeling last night, because I went out with a group of friends. It's one of my best friends was in that group, who I haven't seen in almost a year, because he's been down in Virginia. I'm up in New York. And we went to this bar called Handcrafted Cocktails. And it was a good time. We were pounding vodka sodas, taking tequila shots. I probably had about 6-7 drinks total. So, you know, for me, I don't have that high of a tolerance for alcohol at the moment. So I was feeling pretty fucking smacked after like 5 drinks, and then had one or two more after that. And I remember, like it was such a good time. It was well worth it. I don't regret anything at all. I want to say that first. But part of me was thinking, you know, what am I signing up for right now? I know I'm going to have a hangover tomorrow. And could I accomplish the same level of fun that I'm having now with maybe half the drinks, like three drinks instead of six? And thinking back on the night, I like before I even ordered a drink, I was talking to my group of friends. There are about 10 people there. And sure, you're a little bit more socially anxious without alcohol flowing through your system. You're a little bit more, you know, are people judging me? You have more inhibitions, more walls up, thinking about, you know, what the fuck, what's going through other people's minds right now? There's so much shit going through my mind. Am I saying the right thing? Am I saying the wrong thing? And I had a really good time. 30 minutes, the first 30 minutes were especially fun. And I was completely sober for like the first 30, probably 45 minutes until I ordered a drink. And looking back on the night, I woke up the next morning and I was thinking about how the night went. I was like, damn, like I was funnier when I was sober. I was, after the first 5 minutes of, you know, kind of getting rid of your social anxiety a little bit, the conversation felt easier. I was thinking more on my feet. I was having such an insanely good social connections. And I think alcohol enhances those social connections up to about 2 to 3 drinks. And then after that, you're kind of at this point of diminishing returns. And also the time matters too. So if you're, you know, if you're having 8 drinks, but it's over the course of an entire day, then you could end up being relatively sober / buzzed. Like you won't necessarily be super fucked up if you're out for 12 hours and you have less than a drink an hour. You could be fine, but this was probably, you know, 2-3 hours. And I was thinking, like, I know I'm signing up for a hangover when I have 5+ drinks, sometimes even 3, depending on the alcohol. But I kept drinking, even though deep down I really didn't want to. And I don't think I was afraid of saying, you know, guys, I'm done drinking, or I could have just ordered a seltzer and water, seltzer and lime. This is seltzer and water. Yeah, I'll take a seltzer water, please. Hold the water. But yeah, I could have ordered, like, I'll do a go-to, like, seltzer and an orange slice or seltzer and lime. So it looks like you're drinking a vodka soda, but in reality, it's just water. And I feel like I'm holding a drink in my hand. And it also looks to other people like I'm drinking. So it's kind of a pussy move a little bit. But I actually do like that. Like on nights where before COVID, I would go out and I might have 6 drinks, but 3 of those are seltzers. And last night, the thought never even occurred to me to do that. I think it's just like getting back into the swing of going to bars and realizing that, oh shit, like, there's an option to be at a bar and not drink, because I had been in my apartment and hanging outside of bars for so long and not drinking and also drinking sometimes that, like, I walked into the bar and something awoke in me. I'm like, oh, this is like the spot to drink. Like, we're at the bar now. We're getting fucked up. We're getting after. We're ripping shots. We're, you know, we're pounding beers. And I think I just have to get used to, like get back into the routine of being at a bar and then also recognizing that I don't necessarily have to drink a certain amount of alcohol, or I don't necessarily have to just keep drinking because I'm there for a certain amount of time at the bar. And I was thinking about it last night. I'm like, why did I not just, like, I knew I was pretty buzzed. I was having a great time. Why did I continue to order, you know, more vodka sodas? And a lot of people will say it's more of a cultural thing. Like, we drink because, you know, it's social norms, cultural norms. It's outside pressure on me that's forcing me to drink. And I mean, yeah, that might be true. There might be a little bit that has to do with that. But I also think it comes from within yourself. You have to give yourself permission to order something without alcohol and do it in front of other people and be okay of it and not be ashamed of it. And don't let the assholes in the bar that are treating you like shit, whether it's guys or girls calling you a pussy, like make you feel bad for drinking something that doesn't have alcohol in it, because they're probably insecure about something with themselves. They're probably seeing you not drink alcohol, and you're like when people are engaging in activities that they know are not great for them. I have nothing against alcohol. It's just that after a certain point, it starts to be not great, not enjoyable. So when someone hops off the train and starts to do other things that are outside of the group, people can become insecure, and then they reflect those insecurities by telling you, you know, stop being a bitch, or be like, we're getting fucked up, getting after it. And I've done that to other people when I was younger. So I understand that feeling of, oh, everyone has a drink. Like, what are you not drinking? Are you a narc, bro? Are you, do you just join the police force? Are you here to arrest us? Fucking bitch. But yeah, it's and I've had this situation has happened a couple times where I've been at a bar with a group of friends, and they're also, you know, strangers there too, because it's a bar, and I'll be switching off. I'll order a vodka soda, and then I'll order a seltzer, then I'll vodka soda. And a couple of times when I've ordered a seltzer instead of a vodka soda, either my friends or a stranger sitting next to me said something like, oh, that's a good idea, as if like they didn't know you could order a seltzer at a bar. And that me ordering the seltzer gave the other person permission, or made them feel more comfortable of maybe they were thinking about ordering a seltzer before, and then they saw someone else do it, and then they ordered it. And so it's kind of like this whole game of cat and mouse of who's willing to share themselves boldly and unapologetically through their drink choice. And sometimes that drink choice is a lack of a drink. It's still a drink, but there's no alcohol. And I recorded a podcast with Luke Burgess. He wrote a great book called Wanting, and it's all about mimetic desire and mimesis, and the fact that so many desires and so many wants and so many needs are driven by what other people want. And sometimes just seeing someone want something, recognizing their desire, instills a desire within us. And that can be hard to shake. And sometimes you rationalize it within yourself that, oh, I wanted this because of that reason, you know, because it's embarrassing to admit that you want something because someone else did. You find a way to rationalize it within yourself. And sometimes mimetic desire is a good thing, where I'll see people doing healthy things, treating their bodies well, treating their minds well. I started meditating because of mimetic desire. I started a lot of the workouts that I do now with Steel Mace Flow and Muay Thai, probably because of mimetic desire. I saw other people doing things. They were having a good time. And so that applies also to things like ordering seltzer, where if you're in a bar and you really don't want to drink and you kind of feel trapped into drinking, and then someone else orders something that they are projecting their desires in public and right in front of you, and then you may see their desires and the fact that, oh, this person took action and ordered a seltzer, and then maybe you do recognize that, oh yeah, that sounds good, I'm going to order a seltzer too. And maybe you don't even recognize the mimetic desire. Maybe you see someone else holding a seltzer, you don't actually order it, and then, you know, 30 minutes later you come to the decision, or you believe you came to the decision on your own to order the seltzer, when in reality you were surrounded by someone who you kind of took like a subconscious check of what they were doing, and then you took that into account, but you weren't. It's kind of like, it's not black and white the way Luke describes it. We're constantly in a pool of people's desires swimming around, and so I think mimetic desire is, you know, there's no way that it's not part of drinking culture, because like there are a lot of parts of drinking that are great, and there are also a lot of parts that are very unenjoyable, like getting too drunk, getting sick, getting nauseous, getting hungover as fuck, not doing the things that you wanted to do today, which is also another thing. I was supposed to do a workout class this morning. Ended up staying out later than I wanted, drinking more than I wanted or more than I had initially planned, and then ended up not going to the workout class at 9 a.m. And I apologize for picking my nose right now, but it's a little extra itchy. But yeah, I didn't go to the workout class at 9 a.m. Again, I'm fine with that decision. I hadn't seen this friend in forever, so I kind of told myself before, you know, whatever happens tonight, seeing my friend is more important. And if I'm out till 3 a.m., which I was, I want to get a full night's sleep and wake up around 9:30, 10 and not get less sleep to do the workout class, because, you know, sleep is fucking important for me and for being able to have a good day and a less stressful day. So I'm completely okay with that. But it's just like this weird combination of mimetic desire, mimesis, seeing what other people want. And a lot of it comes down to being okay with showing desires that are not of the group, and also recognizing when someone is doing something that is good, and when in that case it might be good to mimic that person's desire, because you're actually bringing positivity into your life. So that's what I noticed last night about drinking. And damn, like, I haven't recorded a solo episode in a while, like I said, but this feels fucking good. So let's keep going. Let's play a song right now. I'm gonna play a song by one of my favorite music artists. His name is Mike Studd. This is a song called Gang. And yeah, fuck it. I'm recording on Riverside FM right now, which allows you to play music. And so I'm not going to play the full thing, but I'll play a little bit just as kind of like a break, a transition in between topics. And I want to talk about Kratom next, the Kratom plant and my experience with it. And so, yeah, Mike is what his artist name is now, Mike, and formerly Mike Studd. Throws out bangers, and this one is called Gang.
Is it all about love? Is it all about trust? Is it all about the party? Is it all about dress? Is it all about you, you, you? Hey, little thing you do, do, do. Is it all about the view? Is it all about love? Is it all about trust? Is it all about the buzz? Hey, little thing you do, do, do. Feels like it's about you, you, you. Yeah. My load is heavy, let's keep it light. Let's keep it light. I just been doing this shit I like.
Yeah.
She said I sound new, it's a different mic. Let's say that shit for a different night. My ex said I'm running wild, bitch, I might be. Can keep me in check like a fucking Nike. But I did a deal for some fucking Nikes. Nothing I said is a fucking lie. Now why not? Check my whole catalog, you won't find one. Not one lie, one time. Just love for my brothers, got none for these bitches. And all I've been saying is gang, gang. I'm sick and tired of being around people that don't even care about the same.
Check out Mike. Again, that's called Gang. He is an unbelievable artist. He's done everything independent. Started listening to Mike Studd when he was Mike Studd back in my college baseball days. And he's been through a lot of shit. Also has a podcast, and it's called You Never Know. So yeah, definitely go check out Mike. So the next thing that I wanted to talk about is the drug called Kratom, Mitragyna speciosa, and it is a leaf that I believe originated in Southeast Asia, Thailand area. And one of my friends actually turned me on to the Kratom plant, and I did a lot of research on Kratom, because if I'm going to add anything into my body, even if it's only once or a few times, I want to know, what are the effects? What is it going to do to me? because I definitely do have anxiety around just putting things into my body, especially drugs. And I came across the kratom leaf because of my friend, looked up its effects, and it is a very polarizing drug. There's an entire community of people that are huge advocates for kratom, especially people who have been addicted to opioids because it has opioid-like effects. And if you want to know how the drug actually works, there are some great YouTube videos. If you just search kratom, what is kratom? You know, you'll get a lot of propaganda like kratom's the worst drug ever, kratom's super addictive, which for some people it may be. But if you want to learn the technical side of it, there's some good videos on YouTube about like the actual receptors that it's interacting with. And so, yeah, it was big in the community for people who are suffering pain and didn't want to take prescription drugs like Vicodin, Oxycontin, things like that. And I also saw the other side of the community, people that are super against kratom, saying, you know, it's the worst thing that ever happened to them. They got addicted to it. They were taking it, you know, every day, like really high doses of kratom multiple times a day, and saying, you know, they basically couldn't function without drinking this green sludge. And you can get it in capsules. You could get it in ground up leaves, kind of like powder. A lot of people drink it in tea. There's actually a lot of kratom bars, kava bars in Brooklyn that I'll probably go check out eventually, but I actually order it to my place, and that's how I make it. And so it is very divided. Kratom is super polarizing. I think there was an attempt by the government recently to ban kratom or put it on the illegal substance list, schedule one or two, whichever that was. And that ended up not happening because a bunch of kratom users actually came out to support the drug and say that this law should not pass. And so I realized that people have different experiences on the drugs depending on who they are. And both of those experiences may be valid. They probably are. There are probably people that may have had their lives ruined by kratom, and there are also people that experience great benefits from kratom. And so I want to talk about my experience in particular. This is only for me. This is how I started experiencing kratom and taking kratom. So I bought these kratom capsules that one serving is about 600 milligrams of kratom, which is not a high dose of kratom at all. A lot of people will take kratom in the 3 to 5 gram range, sometimes more for a single serving. The pills I was taking was from, I forget the company, maybe Urban Ice Organics, but it was caffeine combined with kratom. And the caffeine was about 75 milligrams of caffeine, which, you know, around a cup of coffee. Kratom was of 600 milligrams, and it's a very low dose. And I started taking it in the morning almost as like a replacement for coffee. I would take the kratom. I would feel awake. I would feel, you know, energized. I wasn't like this godly thing because I wasn't taking a high dose, but I definitely noticed the effect of the caffeine, but then also kind of like not an alert feeling. It was more like a calm alert feeling. Like I felt more than just the caffeine from the coffee. I felt more open. I felt like more connected, especially during podcasts that I would record in the morning. Like I felt just like a little bit of an extra layer of warmth and smoothness. Nothing like feeling fucked up, nothing feeling like out of control, not even close. Like it definitely works in the background. And so I continued to take that dose. I still take that dose in the morning. And then I also wanted to stop drinking coffee after noontime, so after 12 p.m. And I would usually take the kratom capsules with the caffeine, so 75 milligrams caffeine, 600 milligrams of kratom. I would probably have one cup of coffee in between that dose and around noontime. And then for my afternoon work session for about 2 to 3 hours, I would I would make a kratom tea. I had the powder, and so I would measure out 2.5, I think it was 2.4 grams actually, so a flat teaspoon of the kratom leaf, the ground up powder kratom leaf. I would do a flat teaspoon, 2.4 grams. And that I like that smooth effect because I was sipping it as I was working. And that's a little bit of a higher dose, but it's still not a super high dose. Like a lot of people in forums I would read, like a typical dose could be 5 grams. Some people start with like taking 5 grams. I personally, I would not tell someone else to do that. I wouldn't tell someone to do anything, but I would urge them to start low. And I loved it. I take kratom. I do the kratom tea for podcasts. Like I said, it makes me feel more open, more connected. I don't get any withdrawals recently, at all. I haven't felt like any weird effects on days where I don't take it or weekends where I don't take it, or even weeks. I did a trip on the West Coast and I didn't bring any kratom with me, and I was drinking coffee and felt amazing. And I think it's probably because I kept the dose low and still keep it lower, because I'm not looking for an escape. I don't want my body to get used to feeling like almost fucked up by the kratom leaf. And when I read some people's experiences, they're definitely like getting a huge kind of like overwhelming, almost like opioid-like feeling with higher doses of kratom. I've read people taking, you know, 10 grams, 20, 50 grams. I think I saw one guy that was taking 100 plus grams a day. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, and also for me, I don't crave that opioid like feeling. I don't crave, and I've taken opioids because I've had a couple elbow surgeries. I don't really crave that feeling. For whatever reason, it doesn't vibe with me. And I'm lucky in that sense. So when I have the slight stimulant effect from the lower doses less than 3 grams, and my total for every day, I think, you know, on podcast days where I'm doing 2 hour plus podcasts, I may take like a little bit over 5 grams. But on most days, I'll do the 600 grams in the morning with the 600 milligrams. I'd be, I don't know what that would do actually. But yeah, the 600 milligrams with the caffeine. And then I do the 2.4 grams around noon, 1 o'clock, after I work out, you know, after I eat lunch, as my stimulant-free work drink. And I haven't really experienced, like I said, I people report getting withdrawal effects, like not being able to sleep, getting the shakes, things like that. And I suspect that those are people that are taking very high doses of kratom multiple times a day. And for me, I have used it very similar to coffee. I will treat kratom like I treat coffee. I'm not looking to get fucked up by coffee. It's been about 4 or 5 months I've been taking it now. I'm not looking for an escape. I'm looking for something to keep me alert and keep me a little bit more open, especially with something like podcasting. It's great to have the feeling of being accepted and wanting to connect with people, because that's ultimately what podcasting is. It's a recorded connection in real time. And so if I was going to, you know, write a 101 guide to starting kratom, for me, I would say, you know, a lot of forums say you can't feel the effects until you reach a certain dose, like at least 1 gram or 2 grams, 5 grams. I would say, you know, like start out with, you know, a 300 milligram capsule or maybe two of those and see how you feel. Do 600 milligrams and treat it as you would treat coffee if that's the effect you're looking for. I'm not looking to manage pain. I'm purely looking for something, like I said, to open me up, to stimulate me a little bit. And I don't want to be drinking caffeine later in the day. And Kratom has done that for me. And yeah, I mean, I'm also 4 months in, so maybe a year from now or 2 years in, 2 years from now, I'll feel differently. And it also depends on you personally, what you can handle, if you trust yourself. I'm lucky. Like I said, with this particular drug effect, I don't feel very drawn to it, and that's not because of my willpower or anything. You know, I don't practice not becoming addicted to opioids or things that can exhibit opioid-like effects. Most of it probably has to do with my genetics, a little bit from my upbringing, from my parents talking to me about drugs, and different drugs do have that hook sinking in effect for me. So like I said, opioids, I don't really feel the need to push opioids, like keep moving the effect like deeper and deeper and taking more and more and more, because my body and my mind just don't vibe with higher doses of things those effects. But stimulants for me is like Adderall, cocaine. Like I could not control myself with something like an Adderall prescription or some sort of ADHD stimulant, and things like cocaine I stay away from, because those are the two drugs that I've felt that absolutely sink their hooks into me. I'm on, you know, like someone has good blow or someone has Adderall, and you know, chop that shit up, you're drinking, having a good time, and I could do that shit all fucking day. Like, I love the effects. Some people don't like the effects of Adderall. Some people say it makes them very jittery. For me, the best combination of drugs that I've ever had in my system was, I was on a lake in Maine one time, and this was a weekend after I graduated from University of Richmond and down at school in Virginia, and we went up to this lake house in Maine with a bunch of guys, and we were drinking. One of the guys had an Adderall prescription. We were just like railing Adderall. This is all guys, by the way, no girls. We're just like having a boys' weekend. So we had weed, Adderall, and booze. And I remember one of the most pleasant feelings I've ever had in my life was being high on marijuana, a little bit drunk, and then also having a good amount of Adderall in my system, because it was like the paranoia from the weed was being mitigated by the confidence from the Adderall, and then the Adderall anxiety, like jittery feeling, was being mitigated by the booze. And I was sitting on this cliff just thinking like, damn, you know, this is fucking sick, but also this is not good to do every weekend, or this drug would not be good for me to have access to, because my genetics definitely do vibe with alcohol and other stimulants. I feel the hooks sinking in, and I will push that. I will push the stimulant effect. I, for whatever reason, I feel no desire or drive to push the effects of Kratom. I love where it's at right now. I take it 4 to 5 mornings a week, and afternoons I'll do the tea. I'll usually take a weekend off. If I have a podcast, I'll drink some tea before the podcast. But I love where it's at. It's been about 4 months, maybe 5. I don't feel myself really getting used to it. Maybe the effect was a little bit stronger in the beginning, but I feel like the happy zone for me is about, you know, 1 to 2.5, maybe 3 grams. I would say the max that I've done is 5 a few times, but it's like, that is for me, that's the effect that I want. Going more than that, it would be taking away from the effect that I'm aiming for. Because even with the 5 grams of Kratom, I'm like, this is like a little bit, like I don't like this as much as the 2 to 3 with the tea. So what I guess I'm saying is, definitely do your research. Everyone is different. So what works for me is probably not going to work for everyone else. It may work for you, it may not work for you. This is just purely my insights. And the other thing I want to say is, don't be scared away by forums or very polarizing drugs because you never know what's going on behind the scenes. They're definitely dangerous drugs that you should stay away from. Part of the reason why I haven't used cocaine almost at all in the past 3 years, there's been like a couple nights here and there, but it's like, it's scary the shit that gets chopped up in it. There are people that are dying from fentanyl overdoses taking cocaine, and that shit's scary to me. And my drug anxiety, like I feel like I would just, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. I'd like to know what's in what I'm taking, which is also why I like Kratom, because I know exactly what's in it. I'm buying it from a company that has third-party independent testing, and I like that. But yeah, don't be afraid to try something as just because you see it has a polarizing effect, because it can be scary sometimes when you read forums about Kratom saying it'll ruin your life. And again, those experiences may be valid, but you never know what's going on behind the scenes, because Kratom, for me, has been a great substance that I would put in the same type of potency as coffee, the way that I use it. And it also helps a fuck ton of people with pain. And companies love making money off of pain medications and pain prescriptions. It's billions and billions of dollars. I don't know how big the industry actually is, but it's a fucking billions of dollar industry. And what someone that prescribes things like Vicodin or Oxycontin wouldn't like is a natural leaf that's not patented to be a solution to long-term pain, because they wouldn't make any money. And so you never know who's infiltrating forums, what's going on, you know, behind closed doors, who are these actually owners of accounts. And I'm not saying that people don't have valid negative or addictive experience with Kratom, because like I was just talking about alcohol. Alcohol is a poison that I put into my body, and luckily I haven't become addicted to it, but other people do, and they die from it. Or they cause other people to die with their use, depending on what they're doing. What was I saying? But yeah, Kratom, you never know what's going on with big drug companies. There's a clear motivation for Kratom to go away, because it sounds like, from what I read, that a lot of people who are popping pills for years are able to put down the pill bottle and pick up Kratom and feel relatively satisfied, or at least be able to get through the day taking less pills or maybe none at all. So it does seem to have a lot of great effects. And so, yeah, definitely do your own research. Definitely, you know, start small, like with anything. I wouldn't just pound 5 grams, and I would, you know, take less than a gram and see how it makes you feel. Then, you know, take the same amount, and maybe if you're drinking coffee, I've drank Kratom before. I've drank alcohol a couple times, and what a cool effect that I've noticed, which is what I like about Kratom, is it doesn't make me feel like I need to drink as much. I remember there were a couple times where I first started taking Kratom, and I would be out, or you know, even during COVID, in my apartment with alcohol readily available, and on nights where I normally would have poured myself a drink before I go to bed, or just to like chill and watch some TV, I didn't. Like I didn't feel motivated to drink, and I drank Kratom maybe a couple hours before. And so that is also another positive effect of Kratom for me, is that it makes me feel like I'm drinking less coffee, and I'm also drinking less alcohol, which is, you know, it probably sounds like bullshit, because I just was talking about how fucked up I got last night. But that's not my normal habit. Over the last 4 or 5 months, I have been drinking less. And I think part of it is that I get that relaxed, at ease feeling from Kratom even 4 to 5 hours after taking it. And, you know, if I drink a cup of tea around 2-3 p.m. and I'm starting to wind down for bed around like 8, maybe 9, when maybe I'd have a drink, like a beer or a whiskey, those effects are still happening in my body. And it's making me want to drink less. So that is a positive effect. Definitely do your own research. Definitely look into it for yourself. I if you have an experience for Kratom or with Kratom, definitely hit me up on Instagram. You can send me a DM at Augzoro. I'm interested in hearing what other people think about it, because it's something that I won't say helped me, because I wasn't really looking for help. It was just something that was interesting for me. And I, as a podcaster, the effects that some people were describing from Kratom would be exactly what I want, which is that in lower doses, it provides more of a stimulant-like effect. But it's also, you're more open and you're less socially anxious and more willing to connect with people. And as a podcaster, that's like fucking, like, that's gold right there. If you can be awake, but then also less anxious and more willing to put yourself out there, then fuck yeah, like, go for it. So see what works for you, try it. And yeah, let me know, send me a DM. All right, so I've asked, a question to myself, which is, what is it like taking Kratom? I also want to answer a question from Reddit. So for this podcast, for the solo episodes, I'm going to ask some questions to myself, like things I've been thinking about, but then I'll also get some questions from the internet. And then if you guys start sending me questions, I'll also answer questions on here as well, because I think I would enjoy doing that. Not that I'm qualified to give advice, but hopefully it may be able to help someone. It's kind of fun for me to just go through it and try to talk about things in real time, even if I don't solve it. So here is a question from Reddit. This is from the Ask Reddit page, which there's any question you can think of on there. So the first question from Reddit is, without telling your age, who was your teenage crush from the entertainment world? Is it your first teenage crush? What does it say here? Who was your teenage crush? So just in general, from the entertainment world, without telling your age. So, I mean, you guys probably know about how old I am without, if you've been listening to the podcast or if you're watching this, hopefully I do look like I'm in my 20s, but maybe not with the beard. But who is my teenage crush? Fuck, that's a good question. In the entertainment world, I would have to say Topanga from Boy Meets World. Topanga from Boy Meets World was, dude, she was a thottie. She was a thick hottie. I don't know if that's what thought stands for, but she was a hella thick hottie, and she was probably my first person, the first person I saw on TV. And this is also when I was going through early puberty too. So when I was starting to become attracted to the opposite sex, probably, you know, 12, 13 years old, I was watching Boy Meets World, and they have so many fucking episodes, and it was constantly on, I forget which channel it was on, maybe it was Disney Channel or something else, but there would be like Saturdays where it's just straight Boy Meets World marathons, and I would watch like 10 episodes in a row. I fucking loved it. And Topanga was definitely the first celebrity that I was attracted to. And yeah, it makes me think how much does society actually dictate who we're attracted to? Because a lot of people say, you know, the stick figure models, you know, what's on the cover of magazines, that creates this attraction, that this, it's telling men what to be attracted to, and we internalize that. But Topanga, she's beautiful. I don't know the name of the actress, but she's beautiful. I'm sure she's still looking good, maybe not, we'll see. I'll look it up after, but she was not the typical, you know, stick thin model you'd see on the cover of Vogue. She was thick. She was healthy. She had a healthy frame. She had a pretty face. She had a little bit of a thicker face. It wasn't like that thin V cut. And she was gorgeous. She was fucking hot. And I was also seeing, you know, I was starting to watch porn a little bit. I was looking at magazine covers. And even with that, I remember thinking, wow, Topanga is like my ideal body type. And I've always been attracted to more athletic girls, thicker girls, not necessarily like ripped, but girls that, you know, have some meat on them, are curvy. And I enjoy that. I like that. So Topanga was my first crush from Boy Meets World. The second question from Reddit is from Ask Reddit forum. This got a bunch of upvotes. I think it was like 5,000 upvotes. Someone asked, what do I think really happens after death? What do I think really happens after death? That is a deep, deep question, especially after the Topanga teenage crush. What do I think happens after death? I forget who said it, who said this, but someone said something along the lines of dying is the same as being born. The feeling of death and what happens after death. Like, if you want to imagine what happens when you die, just imagine what it was like to be born. And if you imagine what it was like, or sorry, it was, if you want to know what it's like to die, just imagine what it was like before you were born. So like, you're dead, you're on this end of the spectrum, and then you're born, and then you're going to this end of the spectrum. Like, you're before, and then you're after life. And for some reason, that always stuck with me. It made sense to me. Because before I was born, I don't remember shit. I don't remember anything. Maybe I was in some place. Maybe my soul was trapped somewhere or trying to get into a body. There's a, you know, I don't think that. I think that dying is a lot like what it's like before you're born, which is just nothing. There's no experience. There's no, you know, there's no waiting room. There's no purgatory, heaven, hell. And for me, this has actually been one of the biggest leaps ahead in my life, is coming to terms with the fact that I, you know, there probably is no afterlife. I don't believe there's an afterlife. I don't believe there's anything that's waiting to judge us. I think the judgment happens while we're on Earth. And that has actually caused me to value my time here much more. When I was growing up in, going to Catholic school, going to church every weekend, and even in college, I was in a Christian group for a little bit in college my freshman year. And so much of the narrative is living to get into heaven, that you want to be saved to get into heaven in Christianity. Jesus Christ is your savior, and your, you know, your goal is to get into heaven. And then once I stopped believing in God, and once I stopped going to church and being a Christian, I was forced to question my motivation for things. And I realized that when I do good things, there's definitely a selfish aspect to it. And that varies depending on what you're doing. I don't think anything is truly altruistic, because doing good things for other people makes you feel good. It makes me feel good. And so I definitely get a little, you know, boost from volunteering or helping someone out. And then I'm also seen as a good person, or people, you know, it ups my reputation. And so there's always going to be a little part of it. And I think it's good to actively be aware of that part, because if you're not, you can trick yourself and be like, oh, I'm better than everyone because I like volunteered twice at a soup kitchen. And, you know, you can kind of like fall into that thing easily, which I have, where I'm like on a streak of doing good things. Like, I'll help my grandma take out the garbage, and I'll go volunteer somewhere. I was volunteering at Helping Hands, which helps blind people do tasks on the weekend, like get groceries and stuff like that. And you, like, you hit a good lick, and you're like, oh my God, am I better than everyone? Like that Taylor Tomlinson joke where she's walking around in Target after she's engaged with the ring on her finger, and she's like, am I better than everyone? And you can fall into that. especially if you don't recognize that there is a selfishness to doing good. So, and I try to minimize that, but I'm aware. I'm a human being. I'm doing good things in part that I want to be seen as a good person. But then also my motivation for doing things is just because I'm here and because I can. I don't think there's a heaven. I'm not trying to get into heaven, and I didn't become a bad person. I think I actually became a better person because my rationale is, okay, if there's no point system, why should I help this person move out of their apartment? And what I keep coming back to is because I can, because I'm here, because I'm here for a short fucking time and I have the ability to do it. Also, like I said, it'll make me feel good. Doing good things in the world. I believe any action you have also has a sort of tracer to it. I know this sounds weird and wild, but I do think actions have a life. Like when you do a good thing, you put out good energy into the world. And when you do a bad thing, you put out bad energy in the world. And the more good things that you do, the more good energy you do, and it rubs off on people. And I think there's like there, I wouldn't be surprised if 100 years from now, we actually discover that like there's a force that we weren't able to see because it's not on our visible spectrum. But like there's a force that happens that goes along with our actions, that you do a good thing and we can actually observe that like you just exerted a positive force in the world. Not just like, oh, he did a good thing, but like, no, like you somehow made a molecular change in the universe or maybe in someone's neurons in their brain because you did a good thing for them, like on a like a traceable level. And then the same thing would be true if you do a bad thing. So yeah, what do I think really happens after death? I think I would be pretty close to the what happens after death. If you want to know, just imagine what it was like before you were even born. And for me, not realizing, or for me realizing that there's no afterlife. I know some people believe in an afterlife and or multiple lives, and that's fine. That's interesting to me. I would love to talk to people that have different views than me, especially on religion and afterlife. But I think for me, the lack of an afterlife being available, the lack of that choice has made me seize the moment more, has made me be less procrastinistic, if that's a word, and just realizing that, you know, this is it. There is no round two. I'm not going to get another interaction with this person in the afterlife. I may never see this person again. And so I better be on my shit now because I can. And because everything I do, it's either going to be a positive or a negative force. Every action, you know, it's hard to be completely neutral. So everything you do is going to be positive and negative. And I have a sign on my door that says, be kind and pay attention. And that's from a meditation that Sam Harris had in his Waking Up app. And it stuck with me. He said in one of his meditations, he sends out daily meditations every day. he sends out daily meditations every day in a daily manner. He sends out every day this daily meditation. And in one of these meditations, he says something about us only having two jobs in life, really, and anything that we're doing. This, no matter how much your task changes or where you are, the only two jobs you ever have in life is be kind and pay attention. And so I have that on my door as a reminder. Maybe I'll get a tattoo of it before I walk out into the world from my apartment, especially when I'm pissed or stressed or whatever, just to remember. Or even if I'm happy, like just to remember to share that with other people, to always be kind, always pay attention. Don't be reactive. Like if you feel something, let it run through you. It's okay to pause. You don't have to just fucking like knee jerk to everything that someone does to you and recognize it. So that's my thoughts on the afterlife. I want to close out with a letter from this book called Letters of Note. You could see it if you guys are on the video. If you're watching the video on YouTube, there it is, Letters of Note. You could pick it up on Amazon. It has, It's called Letters of Note, an eclectic collection of correspondence deserving of a wider audience, compiled by Sean Usher. And they're different letters from different people throughout history. And I went through this whole book a couple times. I used to read a different letter every morning because I thought it was cool. I thought it would give you a window into some people that were not famous, some people that were celebrities, presidents, notable people from history, just to get kind of the vibe of what was going on when shit was, this person was writing about it. It's letters from history are a window into different times and different places. And so I want to end on a positive note. I'll definitely read some darker letters, but today I'm feeling more to end on a positive note. So this one is letter number 009 in Letters of Note. And this one is called I Like Words. It's by Robert Perosh to Various. I think Various is a magazine. So this is a little preface to each letter. It comes with a preface to explain the situation. So the preface for this letter called I Like Words is, in 1934, a New York copywriter by the name of Robert Perosh quit his well-paid job and headed for Hollywood, determined to begin the career of his dreams as a screenwriter. When he arrived, he gathered the names and addresses of as many directors, producers, and studio executives as he could find and sent them to what is surely one of the most engaging and apt cover letters ever to be written. A letter that secured him three interviews, which one of which led to his job as a junior writer at MGM. 15 years later, screenwriter Robert Perosh won an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay for his work on the war film Battleground. A few months after that, he also won a Golden Globe. I can't speak, but I will now. What if I just read the whole letter like this? Dear sir, I lack words. I like fat, buttery words such as ooze, turpitude, glutinous, toady. Oh my god, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Maybe I'll read a letter in a different voice today, but I'll read it straight. Not sexually, but just like straight. I guess it would be sexually because I'm straight, but just straight up how it's written in my normal voice. So this is the letter that Robert Perosh wrote when he was trying to get a job as a screenwriter. He said, "Dear sir, I like words. I like fat, buttery words such as ooze, turpitude, gluttonous, and toady. I like solemn, angular, creaky words such as straight-laced, cantankerous, pecunious, valedictory. I like spurious black as white words such as mortician, liquidate, tonsorial, demimonde. I like V words such as Svengali, Svelte, Bravura, Verve. Burp break. I like crunchy, brittle, crackly words such as splinter, grapple, jostle, crusty. I like sullen, crab, scowling words such as skulk, glower, scabby, churl. I like, oh heavens, my gracious land, sake words such as tricksy, tucker, genteel, horrid. I like elegant, flowery words such as estivate, peregrinate, elysium, halcyon. I like wormy, squirmy, mealy words such as crawl, blubber, squeal, drip. I like sniggly, chuckly words such as cowlick, gurgle, bubble, and burp. I like the word screenwriter better than copywriter. So I decided to quit my job in a New York advertising agency and try my luck in Hollywood. But before taking the plunge, I went to Europe for a year of study, contemplation, and horsing around. I have just returned, and I still like words. May I have a few with you? Robert Perosh, 385 Madison Avenue, room 610, New York, El Dorado 5-6024. God damn. That is a great letter. Just like the way that he put that together, I feel like that goes, like there's so many rules. There's so many rules in getting jobs, writing a resume. Like it has to be like this. Like cover letters have to be this. I feel like if you abide by the rules, you're gonna sink into the rest of the mundanity of what people are doing. Because yes, rules are sometimes good to follow. I would, a lot, like society wouldn't, operate without rules and laws. But sometimes it's like, if you're doing something creative, I think rules can be a distraction and rules can actually be a detriment to the work that you're doing. And part of the reason I want to record solo episodes, the way that I do it is there's not a lot of prep into this. I have a list with the four things that I talked about, but no bullet points and stuff like I used to do, because I felt like too kind of strict with the solo episodes that I used to do. I'd have like a page of notes almost with 20 bullet points for a 15-minute episode, and I would feel kind of restricted, because I would feel like I would have to talk about the things that I wrote down. And so for this, I purposely wanted to do low preparation, figure out things in real time, see where it goes. And this has been fucking amazing. So if you're still listening to this, thank you so much. And if you want the bonus solo episodes again, and also bonus conversations, you can check out auxoro.supercast.tech. I'll also put it in the description of wherever you're listening to or watching this. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you for spending an hour with me. And have a beautiful day. I'll talk to you guys next time.